Chapter 42. Arthur Dorset's private elevator in the Jewelry Trade Center rose noiselessly. The only evidence of ascent was the progression of blinking floor levels over the doors. When the car eased to a gentle stop at the penthouse suite, Gabe Strausser stepped out into an entryway that led to the open courtyard where Dorset stood waiting to greet him. Strausser did not relish his meeting with the Diamond Maverick. They had known each other since they were children. The close association between the Straussers and the Dorsets had lasted well over a century, until Arthur cut off any future dealings with Strausser and Sons. The break was not amicable. Dorset coldly ordered his attorneys to inform Gabe Strausser that his family's services were no longer required. The axe fell, not with a personal confrontation, but over the telephone. It was an insult that badly stung Strausser, and he never forgave Dorset. To save his family's venerable old firm, Strausser had switched his allegiance to the cartel in South Africa, eventually moving his company headquarters from Sydney to New York. In time, he rose to become a respected director of the board. Because the cartel was barred from doing business in the United States due to national antitrust laws, they operated behind the coattails of the respected diamond merchants of Strausser and Sons, who acted as their American arm. He would not be here now if the other board directors had not panicked at the rumors of Dorset Consolidated Mining's threat to bury the market in an avalanche of stones at sharply discounted prices. They had to act decisively and fast if they were to avert a disaster. A deeply scrupulous man, Strausser was the only cartel member the board of directors could trust to persuade Dorset not to shatter the established price levels of the market. Arthur Dorset stepped forward and shook Strausser's hand vigorously.
"It's been a long time, Gabe. Too long."
"Thank you for seeing me, Arthur."
Strausser's tone was patronizing, but with an indelible tinge of aversion.
"As I recall, your attorneys ordered me never to contact you again."
Dorset shrugged indifferently.
"Water under the bridge. Let's forget it happened and talk old times over lunch."
He motioned to a table, set under an arbor shielded by bulletproof glass, with a magnificent view of Sydney's harbor. The complete opposite of the crude, earthy mining tycoon, Strausser was a strikingly attractive man in his early 60s. With a thick head of well-groomed silver hair, a narrow face with high cheekbones and finely shaped nose that would be the envy of most Hollywood movie actors, he was trim and athletically built, with evenly tanned skin. Several centimeters shorter than the hulking Dorset, he had dazzling white teeth and a friendly mouth. He gazed at Dorset through the blue-green eyes of a cat ready to spring away from the attack of a neighbor's dog. His suit was beautifully cut of the finest wool, conservative but with a few subtle touches that made him look fashionably up-to-date. The tie was expensive silk, the shoes custom-made Italian and polished just short of a mirror shine. His cufflinks, contrary to what people expected, were not diamonds but made from opals. He was mildly surprised at the friendly reception. Dorset seemed to be playing a character in a bad play. Strausser had expected an uncomfortable confrontation. He certainly had not anticipated being indulged. He no sooner sat down than Dorset motioned to a waiter, who lifted a bottle of champagne from a sterling silver ice bucket and poured Strausser's glass. He noted with some amusement that Dorset simply drank from a bottle of Castlemaine beer.
"When the cartel's high muckamuck said they were sending a representative to Australia for talks," said Dorset, "it never occurred to me they would send you."
"Because of our former long-standing association, the directors thought I could read your mind. So they asked me to inquire about a rumor circulating within the trade that you are about to sell stones cheaply in an effort to corner the market. Not industrial-grade diamonds, mind you, but quality gemstones."
"Where did you hear that?"
"You had an empire of thousands, Arthur. Leaks from disgruntled employees are a way of life."
I'll have my security people launch an investigation. I don't cotton to traitors, not on my payroll.
If what we hear has substance, the diamond market is facing a profound crisis, explained Strausser. My mission is to make you a substantial offer to keep your stones out of circulation.
There is no scarcity of diamonds, Gabe. There never was. You know you can't buy me. A dozen cartels couldn't keep my stones out of circulation.
You've been foolish for operating outside the central selling organization, Arthur. You've lost millions by not cooperating.
A long-term investment is about to pay enormous dividends, Dorset said irrefutably.
Then it's true, Strausser asked casually. You've been stockpiling for the day when you could turn a fast profit.
Dorset looked at him and smiled, showing his yellowed teeth. Of course it's true, all except for the part about a fast profit.
I'll give you credit, Arthur, you're candid.
I have nothing to hide, not now.
You cannot continue to go your own way as if the network didn't exist. Everybody loses.
Easy for you and your pals at the cartel to say when you hold monopolistic control over world diamond production.
Why exploit the market on a whim, said Strausser? Why systematically cut each other's throat? Why disrupt a stable and prosperous industry?
Dorset held up a hand to interrupt. He nodded to the waiter, who served a lobster salad from a cart. Then he stared at Strausser steadily.
I am not operating on a whim. I have over 100 metric tons of diamonds stored in warehouses around the world, with another 10 tons ready to ship from my mines as we speak. A few days from now, when 50% of them are cut and faceted, I intend to sell them through the House of Dorset retail stores at $10 a carat on average. The rough stones I'll sell to dealers at 50 cents a carat. When I'm finished, the market will tumble and diamonds will lose their luster as a luxury and an investment.
Strausser was stunned. His earlier impression was that Dorset's marketing strategy was for the temporary dip in prices to make a quick profit. Now he saw the enormity of the grand design.
You'll impoverish thousands of retailers and wholesalers, yourself included. What can you possibly gain by putting a rope around your neck and kicking over the stool?
Dorset ignored his salad, swilled his beer, and gestured for another before continuing.
I'm sitting where the cartel has sat for 100 years. They control 80% of the world's diamond market. I control 80% of the world's colored gemstone market.
Strausser felt as if he were teetering on a trapeze. I had no idea you owned so many colored gemstone mines.
Neither does anyone else. You're the first outside my family to know. It was a long and tedious process involving dozens of interlocking corporations. I bought into every one of the major colored stone-producing mines in the world. After I orchestrate the demise of diamond values, I plan to move colored stones into the limelight at discounted prices, thereby spiraling the demand. Then I slowly raise the retail price, take the profits, and expand.
You always were a snatch-and-trash artist, Arthur. But even you can't destroy what took a century to build.
Unlike the cartel, I don't plan to suppress competition at the retail level. My stores will compete fairly.
You are making a fight nobody can win. Before you can collapse the diamond market, the cartel will break you. We'll use every international financial and political maneuver ever devised to stop you in your tracks.
You're blowing in the wind, mate, Dorset came back heatedly. Gone are the days when buyers have to grovel in your high and mighty selling offices in London and Johannesburg. Gone are the days of licking boots to be a registered buyer who has to take what you offer him. No more sneaking through back streets to bypass your well-oiled machinery to purchase uncut stones. No more will international police and your hired security organizations fight sham battles with people you label criminals because they engage in your artificially created myth of smuggling and selling on what your little playmates have concocted as the great and terrible illicit diamond market. No more restrictions to create an enormous demand. You've brainwashed governments into passing laws that confine diamond traffic to your channels and your channels only. laws that forbid a man or woman from legitimately selling a rough stone they found in their own backyard. Now, at long last, the illusion of diamonds as a valued object is only days away from being pronounced dead.
You cannot outspend us, said Strausser, fighting to remain calm. We think nothing of spending hundreds of millions to advertise and promote the romance of diamonds.
Don't you think I've considered that and planned for it? Dorset laughed. I'll match your advertising campaign budget with my own, pushing the chameleon quality of colored gemstones. You'll promote the sale of a single diamond for an engagement ring, while I'll promote the Spectrum, a world of fashion touched by colored jewelry. My campaign is based around the theme Color Her with Love. But that's only the half of it, Gabe. I also plan to educate the great unwashed public about the true rarity of colored gemstones versus the cheap, overabundant supply of diamonds. The end result is that I will significantly shift the buyer's attitude away from diamonds.
Strausser rose to his feet and threw his napkin on the table. You're a menace that will destroy thousands of people and their livelihood, he said uncompromisingly. You must be prevented from disrupting the market.
Don't be a fool, said Dorset, showing his teeth. Climb aboard. Switch your allegiance from diamonds to colored stones. Get smart, Gabe. Color is the wave of the future in the jewelry market.
Strausser fought to control the anger that was seething to the surface. My family have been diamond merchants for 10 generations. I live and breathe diamonds. I will not be the one to turn my back on tradition. You have dirty hands, Arthur, even if they are well manicured. I will personally fight you up and down the line until you are no longer a factor in the market.
Any fight comes too late, Dorset said coldly. Once colored gemstones take over the market, the diamond craze will disappear overnight.
Not if I can help it.
What do you intend to do when you leave here?
Alert the board of directors of what you have up your sleeve so they can plan an immediate course of action to knock the wind out of your scheme before it can be realized. It's not too late to stop you.
Dorset remained sitting and looked up at Strausser.
I don't think so.
Strausser missed his meaning and turned to leave. Since you won't listen to reason, I have nothing more to say. Good day to you, Arthur.
Before you leave, Gabe, I have a present for you.
I want nothing from you, Strausser snapped angrily.
This you will appreciate,
Dorset laughed uncharitably.
On second thought, perhaps you won't.
He motioned with one hand.
Now, Boudicca, now.
In one swift motion, the big woman suddenly appeared behind Strausser and pinned his arms to his sides. The diamond merchant instinctively struggled for a minute, then relaxed, staring dazedly at Dorset. What is the meaning of this? I demand that you unhand me.
Dorset looked at Strausser and spread his hands disarmingly.
You neglected to eat your lunch, Gabe. I can't allow you to leave hungry. You might get the idea that I'm inhospitable.
You're crazy if you think you can intimidate me.
I'm not going to intimidate you, Dorset said with sadistic amusement. I'm going to feed you.
Strausser looked lost. He shook his head in disgust and began an unequal struggle to break free of Boudicca's embrace. At a nod of Dorset's head, Boudicca manhandled Strausser back to the table, grasped him under the chin with one hand, and bent his head backward, face up. Then Dorset produced a large plastic funnel and stuffed the lower end between Strausser's lips and teeth. The expression in the diamond merchant's eyes transformed from rage to shock to bulging terror. His muffled cries were ignored as Boudicca tightened her hold around him.
"Ready, Daddy?" she said, leering in cruel anticipation. "Since you live and breathe diamonds, my old friend, you can eat them, too," said Dorset, as he lifted a small canister shaped like a teapot that had been sitting on the table and began pouring a stream of flawless D-grade 1-carat diamonds down Strausser's throat while using one hand to pinch the nostrils of his victim shut. Strausser thrashed wildly, his legs kicking in the air, but his arms were locked as tightly as if he were trapped by a python. Out of sheer terror,
Strausser tried desperately to swallow the stones, but there were too many. Soon his throat could hold no more, and his body's convulsions became less frantic as he choked for air and quickly suffocated. The glaze of death froze his open eyes into an unseeing stare as the glittering stones slowly spilled from the corners of his mouth, rattled across the table, and fell to the floor.